a discussion on the secretarial action for Herring. I think Lori was going to give the council a brief overview of what the implications of this secretarial action would be for Amendment 5. Whenever you're ready, Lori.
Okay, sorry. Anyway, as most of you know, there is a proposed rule published, I believe, on June 15th for changing catch reporting in the Atlantic herring fishery. This is a regulatory amendment that has been initiated by the National Marine Fisheries Service. Comments are due on June 30th, and then at some point in the near future, we anticipate a final rule and implementation, you know, shortly after that. The proposed rule, for those of you who haven't had a chance to read it, very briefly, eliminates IVR reporting for limited access herring vessels and requires daily VMS reporting for herring catch by limited access vessels. It also requires IVR reports for all open access herring vessels, not just those that land more than 2,000 pounds a week. So it's bringing more vessels into the real-time reporting system. It also requires weekly trip reports for all herring vessels, not monthly. So these are all things that are under consideration in Amendment 5. These are all alternatives in Amendment 5. But NIMS is now going through the rulemaking process and making these changes ahead of the amendment. Without getting into the details of the measures themselves, I mean, the implications at this point are that it changes our no-action alternative. It changes the basis for the analysis of the other alternatives in the amendment. So timing is a bit challenging. We are trying to get the draft EIS in front of the council for approval at the September meeting. So without completely predetermining the rulemaking, we have to sort of move forward anticipating these changes. In order to develop the document and develop the no-action alternative and do the analysis. So what we're going to do at this point is I am now in the process of rewriting the document and redrafting the alternatives to make the no-action alternative based on the proposed rulemaking that NIMS has published, as well as what I'm anticipating in the Framework 46 rulemaking. Both of these things affect the no-action alternative, and it's very difficult to write the document and do the analysis unless you know what your status quo is. So I'm working on redrafting the alternatives based on these two upcoming rules. There may need to be some additional tweaking in September, but I think I'm feeling I've gotten some guidance from the service that if we move forward with those two rules sort of forming our new no-action alternative, we'll be in pretty good shape. And then what we'll have to do in September and what I'll do in the document is I will identify in the document the alternatives and the management measures in the document that really no longer apply. We have a whole section in the document of quota monitoring alternatives that consider changes to the IVR program, you know, VMS reporting, all of these things. None of that stuff really, I mean, there's not a lot of that that's going to apply anymore. So I'm going to try to, like, highlight in the document the things that the council may want to consider just eliminating in September. Of course, in September, if the council wants to consider going back to IVR reporting, we could certainly leave those measures in the document. I don't anticipate that's the way we want to go, but what I'll do is when you get the document in September, there will be some measures in the document that will be shaded or highlighted or flagged or something that simply are hopefully going to fall out of the mix. And simplify the document. I mean, these are several of the things that we were contemplating anyway. So it's a little bit challenging, but that's where we are, and we're going to try to do this without significant delay to the amendment. You will get the document in September with some, you know, adjustments that will have to be made after the September meeting, depending on how the rulemaking goes. But we're going to go ahead and move forward redrafting the no-action alternative based on the upcoming two changes that we're anticipating.
Dave Gantler.
Lori, what, I'm sure this may be hard to answer, but what happens if the final rule is significantly different than the proposed rule? Let's just say, for example, that as a result of public comment, they determine everybody should have VMS and all category vessels should report daily. Does that really, really mess things up then, or is it still just a matter of crossing out a few lines and inserting a few other lines?
Well, it would be kind of unfortunate if the final rule was significantly different than the proposed rule. It would mean the document would have to be rewritten again. Not necessarily all of the analysis would have to be redone. I mean, most of the analysis in the document relates to levels of observer coverage, measures to increase sampling, access to certain areas, things like that. The reporting stuff is, you know, an important section of the document, but it doesn't frame the entire analysis of everything else in the document. If we do get to the final rule and it's significantly different, it will cause a delay in that I will have to go back after September and rewrite. And it may require the council to revisit in November. I hope not. That would be if things were really significantly different. I'm not anticipating that based on what I've heard from NIMS, but you can never really predetermine rulemaking.
Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Pat, to you and your shop for moving ahead with this. It's really going to be helpful for all of us that work who are near and dear to Herring. But I do have one question. I don't know if you're going to be able to answer it or whether or not you're going to want to refer to your staff, but in the register notice, there's a statement that ultimately catch from Area 1B and 1A exceeded their respective allocations, and these overages will be deducted from the corresponding sub-ACL in the fishing year 2012. It's my understanding that at least the vessel trip presentation that we got at ASMSC was that there wasn't neither of the areas were exceeded. In fact, this is being used in the new assessment, and that the accounting, the end of the year accounting, is still being worked on by your staff and the PDT. So I'm just curious if you know something else that we don't know yet.
Well, I can confirm the last part, that we're still working on the end-of-year accounting. And so I think there was some discrepancy between different sets of numbers. George may want to add to this, but I think at this point we are still working out the final numbers.
Well, Amendment 4, clearly laid out the template for using the best available method. So I just wondering if there was a disparity that I wasn't aware of.
Lori?
Yeah, and I just want to clarify, the PDT is not involved in the end of the year accounting. That's the responsibility of the agency.
Pat?
Yeah. We have a disagreement over that as well, and think that it would be helpful that the PDT was involved, because it does have to do with the method and the process that we use in the future, and so with. That's our position.
Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, I appreciate the problems that this creates for staff, but not overwhelming problems. But still, appreciate the fact that you've done this, Pat. This will help out certainly this year and in the years to come. With ASMFC efforts to determine how to slow down catch, we need to know accurate records of the landings in particular. Of course, we've worked with your office quite closely, and your office has been very helpful with regard to where landings have stood. We have a meeting on Friday, as a matter of fact, in Portsmouth to talk about catch rates, landings to date this year, and should we allow more days of landing. So I anticipate that with this new reporting procedure, the states, notably Maine, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts, will be in a far better position to determine what to do relative to allowing more days or reducing the numbers of days. It'll make us more responsive to what's going on. And I know that last year there was some discussion about the amount of landings occurring in the Gulf of Maine, at 1A, I think, and some of the major participants, maybe most of the major participants, landing a herring, were very willing to provide daily reports because of this specific reason. So glad you've moved it forward, and we look forward to an implementation as soon as possible.
Mary Beth?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Also, from an industry perspective, I would like to say thank you to the agency for moving the rule, because we have supported moving in this direction, and it is very important to us. For all the reasons that both Terry and Dr. Pierce have mentioned, but also it is the tool that we need to prevent overages in the future, and I think that's, you know, is very important to the industry. We do not want to exceed tax, and, you know, for the days out management, it helps there as well. I did just have one issue with the timing of when we need to report, and I'll provide some written comments to the agency on that. And I did have one question. You did choose to have a short period of time for public comments so that hopefully the rule can move forward quickly. And do you have any, based on that, could you anticipate when a final rule might come out?
Well, I sure wouldn't put any money on it. it depends a lot on the comments, number of comments, how diverse the comments are, whether there's concerns, serious concerns raised in the comments. If we assume that there are few comments and that they're mostly in agreement with the proposal, then we should be able to turn it around pretty quickly. I would say less than a month, 6 weeks, something like that.
Okay, thank you for that. And I think I agree with your assessment that the PDT working to verify the end of the year numbers would be very helpful. And then I just had one other note for people in your packets. We have numbers on preliminary catch and landings information for the council for all FMPs. And for herring, for management area 1A, the cumulative catch is listed as 5,454 metric tons. And I think there's a slight digit problem there. It's really around 500, not 5,000. So just in case anybody was looking at that.
Anyone else on the council? Lori?
I don't really want to belabor this point, but I would just like to get a little bit of clarification from the council, because, you know, the PDT is really trying to get this Amendment 5 document put together. The Amendment 4 document and the regulations specify that NIMS shall make the final determination of the catch levels using the best available information. And I want to just confirm right now that between now and September, the council is in agreement that the herring PDT's priority is to complete this draft EIS for Amendment 5. That was my understanding, because I don't have extra PDT time to work on really much of anything else. So just wanted to confirm that is the herring PDT's priority.
Yeah, I think you just need to work with Paul. Talk with Paul. Anything else? Anyone in the audience? All right. Thanks, Lori. Two more items. Erling's not here, is he? He left. Okay. Two more items. I guess, Sally, you've been away. You missed the first 2 days of the meeting because you were down in Washington. And you had asked for a little bit of time to talk about that meeting. So this is it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I was down in Washington at a meeting held by the National Ocean Council on coastal and marine spatial planning. The meeting was the result of the executive order that passed some, I guess, 18 months ago or so, that established or was the first step in establishing a national ocean policy. And part of that was to have this national workshop that brought together all the mostly federal and state agency interested parties to start figuring out what it was going to mean to implement this national ocean policy. So basically the meeting was designed to develop this shared understanding of what regionally based coastal and marine spatial planning effort would be and how those plans are going to be developed. And so for us, that means the work that the Northeast Ocean, the Northeast Regional Ocean Council, NROC, what they're going to be doing, and the associated, as it's called, regional planning body, how that is going to coordinate marine spatial planning for our region. Participants in the meeting, so it was federal, state, tribal, local authorities, and representatives from the regional fishery management councils. They picked this meeting date because it was the least conflicting with the fishery management council schedule, with the exception of ours. So John and Paul kindly let me go down and represent. So before we went, I consulted with the other representatives from all the other fishery management councils who were going as well. So it was a mix of council chairman and executive directors from all eight fishery management councils. And the prime message that that group was carrying and that I participated in was figuring out how to make sure the fishery management councils are adequately consulted and incorporated into this regional coastal and marine spatial planning initiative that's happening. So on Tuesday, the meeting was all the people who I mentioned, plus it was open to the public as well. There were probably about 500 people there, which I was surprised. I didn't think there would be. There were a lot of people there, and it was mostly an overview given by all the different federal agencies' leadership from Washington on what they see their role is in marine spatial planning at the regional scale. There was also obviously a lot of involvement from the Council on Environmental Quality. Let's see here. The second day, it was just people who were, it was a smaller group, it was probably about, I don't know, maybe 80 people or so who were there. It was just the federal, state, tribal, and fishery council reps, so people who may be on the regional, actual voting members of the regional planning bodies were there. One of the most interesting things, I think, especially for us, is there was a presentation on that day, yesterday, on technical data and information needs for coastal and marine spatial planning at the regional scale. And I gave to Joan, can you put up that website there? Northeast Regional Ocean Council just launched on Tuesday. That's not it. Northeast Ocean Data Portal, and it's a website that brings together data from a variety of different sources, and it's not like it's just a file cabinet full of data sets. they've actually been worked over, peer-reviewed, and combined into this that Joan has put up here, this Northeast Ocean Data Portal, including fisheries data, USGS data, data from the states, all sorts of different sources, so we can see what kind of information is available for the area. So I just wanted to make sure people knew about it, that this exists, it's up, it's live, and there was a lot of really good discussion, because this is obviously the foundation for decision making, is information like this. What was the website address on there? I haven't memorized what it is. Can you just say what it is? Okay, so it's northeastoceandata.org. So it's very interesting to play with, and a lot of good data sets to kind of look at and overlay in different ways beyond the fisheries data that we're mostly used to looking at. But I would say that for this group, the highlight of the discussion yesterday was about the establishment roles and responsibilities for the regional planning bodies. So again, this was a national discussion, but the regional planning bodies, there are actually 9 of them that largely mirror the Fishery Management Council regions, and then plus the Great Lakes. Our council, all the councils have expressed interest in serving as full voting members of the regional planning bodies. We're fortunate in this region to have the Northeast Region Regional Ocean Council, which is very supportive of having the New England Fishery Council serving as full voting members, if that's possible. But one of the big problems that we seem to be coming up against is that the Federal Advisory Committee Act may prevent this. There was some good discussion from National Ocean Council staff associated attorneys on the formation and function of the regional planning bodies, including what the limitations that the Federal Advisory Committee Act, FACA, might have on councils actually really plugging in a meaningful way. They didn't give specific suggestions to address the issue of providing adequate involvement by fishery management councils in the regional planning bodies, but my impression is that they are, and I had some conversations during the formal meeting and informally with a number of people who seem to me to be very clearly working towards solving this FACA problem. They're open to considering a variety of approaches that the regional planning bodies could choose to use to incorporate fisheries information and, I would say, advice, except it's the advice giving that's the hang up with FACA, into the regional planning bodies and to coordinate between the regulatory function of the Fishery Council and the non-regulatory functions that NROC will have. There were several ideas that were tossed around. Nothing was firmed up. There were a whole range of ideas for ways that the Fishery Council might be able to engage most productively with NROC and other fishery management councils with their associated regional planning bodies, everything from potentially having someone who is the state fishery director who serves on the regional fishery management council be essentially a delegate to NROC and have a full voting membership. That wouldn't trigger FACA because they're government employees. Everything from that to developing an MOU between the Fishery Management Council and, in our case, NROC, clarifying what kind of communication we're going to have, the frequency and reasons for consultation between the two bodies, expectations for consideration of information, and making sure that we're not getting in trouble with FACA. So my impression is that what this means for New England is that, first of all, we are perceived as one of the most advanced regions in terms of moving forward on coastal and marine spatial planning, partly because two of the states in our region, Massachusetts and Rhode Island, have already engaged in pretty significant coastal and marine spatial planning efforts in state waters and state and adjacent waters in the case of Rhode Island. The question on a lot of people's minds, as I said, was how to integrate fisheries into these new regional planning bodies. I would encourage our council leadership to keep engaged in a variety of ways through, you know, with consultation with other councils, with folks in D.C., because my impression is that they're really trying to solve this problem. I would also suggest that, we need to continue to kind of evolve how we're working with NROC. You know, Paul has participated in a lot of their meetings. I know NROC is very interested in figuring out how to work actively and productively with the Fishery Council. NROC is going to be hosting a regional workshop on coastal and marine spatial planning sometime over the summer. I don't think they have a date set, but I hope that that's something that that people from the Fishery Council will participate in. And I would suggest that having the new NROC Managing Director, John Weber, who is formerly of the Massachusetts Coastal Zone Management Program, so he's now the Managing Director of NROC, perhaps come to this next executive committee meeting or the next full council meeting, something like that, so that there's the beginnings of communications with him. He's very supportive of getting the council's the Fishery Council as engaged as he possibly can, recognizing both the resources that the council has, the expertise, the public outreach that this council has done for 35 years, and putting that to good use. The last thing I will say is the National Ocean Council is having meetings all over the country on their draft strategic action plan, which is you can get from the whitehouse.gov website. It's on the one for New England is on Monday, this coming Monday, June 27th, at the Exeter High School, Exeter, New Hampshire, from 11:30 a.m. to 3. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thanks, Sally. Any questions for Sally? David?
Recognizing that they're trying to solve this FACA problem, how can the public, the people who might be listening to this meeting, assist in helping them solve this FACA problem? I mean, just calling their congressman and saying, you know, find a solution to this, make sure the fisheries are represented, will that help? Or is it, you know, what bureaucracy needs to get leaned on here to fix this?
I don't think it's a matter, it's a congressional issue. It's a Commerce Department issue, it sounds like, from what I understand, so above NOAA. And, I put out a few ideas that were tossed around informally, I'll say. I mean, these were just ideas that were kind of bouncing around the room all day yesterday for how to solve this problem without recognizing the value of that FACA has, not necessarily that it's a barrier, and figuring out the best way for the council to plug in. So, I don't know how to answer you other than, I don't think a call to a member of Congress is going to get their attention. They weren't there. It was all executive branch.
Dr. Pierce.
Ms. Sally had a good recommendation regarding inviting John Weber to come speak to the executive committee or whomever. I'm optimistic that he will be instrumental in finding a way to, in a more formal way, involve the New England Council on NROC. And I say that because I've worked with John for a few years now when he was with CZM, Massachusetts CZM, and he was one of the prime movers with the Massachusetts Ocean Management Plan. I participated in developing that management plan through my staff, the Division of Marine Fisheries staff. And he and others involved in the development of that plan came to appreciate the need, the absolute necessity of working with those individuals involved with managing fisheries. So he knows what it's all about. He understands the need. So I'm optimistic that it'll go in a good direction, and that some viable options will be developed, and I hope implemented to bring us in a very formal way.
Anyone else? Sally?
Yeah, just in thinking about David Gaethel's question further, it sounds like, you know, nobody said a specific date when they're going to be making some kind of determination on how the Fishery Management Councils might engage with these regional ocean planning bodies. It's going to be soon. But the good thing is that we do have this opportunity in New England. It's on Monday. It's the middle of the day. It's in New Hampshire. That works for some people. It doesn't work for others. But people can go to that. But also, if you go to the WhiteHouse.gov website and just look for National Ocean Council, just search for National Ocean Council, you can submit comments online. So that's maybe a way as well.
Okay, anything else under this topic? Okay, we had, Gene, you wanted to make a clarifying comment?
And an apology to Doug, and he asked whether he could, whether a motion to postpone until a time certain applied to the next session of the council. I was reading the Robert's Rules of Order pretty quickly. While that restriction does apply to Congress, it doesn't apply to other organizations necessarily. And so I think we achieved the same objective as Doug was trying to get at. But for future reference, I think we can apply a motion to postpone to a time certain to either the session in which the motion is offered, or in the next session of the council.
I guess then, by extension, I need to apologize to you too, Doug. But I got bad advice. He was only doing his job, but I got bad advice.
Fatally flawed.
Okay. The last item I had on the agenda was the motion we had tabled concerning the research fishing from, was that Monday? Tuesday.